Hi, everyone. Welcome to Packers Unscripted from Packers.com. I'm Mike Spofford. He's Wes Hodkowitz coming to you here from our studios at Lambeau Field. And Wes, over the past couple of weeks, we've been discussing a little bit more in depth some of these Packer draft picks. We've written some more extensive profiles of them on our website. And you've got another one coming up if it's not on the website already. And that's a fifth round running back, Aaron Jones, out of Texas El Paso. Really, the bulk of the story and the interesting backstory with him is that he has a twin brother who not only also plays football, but also has played football at UTEP.
Yeah, he did, Mike. And, you know, you set the bar incredibly high for me on running back features this offseason, so I had to try to find a way to at least come close to that. And it's a really interesting story that Aaron Jones has. Obviously, a fifth-round pick out of UTEP. Him and his brother both are from UTEP, but it's interesting. Before that, they'd traveled quite often when they were little, as their parents, both of them, were in the military. So
okay.
They were in Tennessee, Virginia, Germany. They had to stop in until the family finally settled in El Paso when they were 12 or 13 years old. So through all that, through all the new destinations, all the new friendships, all the new schools, Aaron and his brother Alvin, they had each other. And this is actually, it's interesting, this is the first time in 18 years they haven't been on the same team together, because Alvin now is a redshirt senior with UTEP. He redshirted his freshman year and has been a three-year starter for them at linebacker. And now Aaron, the all-time leading rusher at UTEP, getting the opportunity now with the Packers. So was able to talk to both of them a little bit about that bond and just how special it is for them to kind of share that connection with football throughout all those moves and transitions in their lives.
Yeah, I never had a twin sibling. I actually don't know too many that have, but those that I've read about and those that I have talked to, that really is a sibling relationship kind of unlike any other. There's been lots of studies done about it, you know, medically and whatnot. Yeah. There is just something very special and very different about it. One of the most interesting things I thought in your story was the decision-making process for Aaron in terms of deciding whether or not to enter the NFL draft. And for him, it wasn't about, oh, where, you know, how high am I going to get drafted? Am I ready for the NFL? It was, can I leave my brother behind at UTEP? It was about that separation of being able to kind of go his own separate way. I found that really intriguing.
Yeah, and it is interesting, too, because Alvin talked about that. They have other siblings. They have a sister and a brother as well. But it's really, you don't really understand that dynamic between twins unless you actually are a twin. So, he really consulted Alvin a lot when he made that decision. One thing you have to understand about Aaron, he technically was an early entrant to the draft, but he actually had a redshirt year due to injury when he had an injury. I think it was his junior year at UTEP. So
okay.
He still was technically like a senior academically. So in a lot of ways, as Alvin demonstrated and talked about, it made a lot of sense for Aaron to make this move. And when they finally sat down and talked about it, Alvin told them, there's really no decision to make. You are the all-time leading rusher at UTEP. You're going to get drafted if you go out. It's time for you to take that next step. So it's been a little bit of transition for both. Alvin said it's a little bit weird on campus right now. It's kind of boring at times as he's preparing and, you know, getting ready for this upcoming season. But for Aaron, now being in Green Bay, it's a new locker room and new people. But in a lot of ways, that's that's something he's been used to during his life as well.
Yeah, a really special time for the two of them as twin brothers to play college football together, to play Division I college football together in their hometown, so
yeah,
to speak, I guess if you can call El Paso that, as you mentioned, as the family moved around so much. But interesting that Aaron as a running back, Alvin as a linebacker, they tackled one another quite a bit in their younger days, I imagine.
They did. They did it at college, too. Alvin told a pretty funny story about during his scout, during that redshirt freshman year, he was actually on the scout team at times, and he'd always just hit Aaron a little bit harder than probably the other people on the scout team, and Aaron didn't always appreciate that, and then he'd come back the next play trying to run his brother over. But that's just the sibling competitiveness that they've always had. It didn't matter if it was video games. It didn't matter if they were at the grocery store. It didn't matter what the competition was. They always were sort of pushing each other. But as Alvin also said, yeah, you can be the biggest competitor, but they also were each other's biggest supporters. And on draft day, Alvin was right alongside his brother as he got picked by the Packers, was the first one to kind of find out about it, that he got in the call from Green Bay. And then also when Alvin graduated from UTEP this past weekend, Aaron, having that chance to have a week off after the rookie orientation, was back in El Paso, got to see his brother walk for graduation. So a special moment as well for them.
Yeah, well, you mentioned the competitiveness. I imagine Aaron is going to draw on every ounce of that competitiveness in this running back group with the five rookies, three draft picks, two undrafted running backs behind Ty Montgomery at the top of the depth chart. It's going to be a really big story to follow this summer.
It really is. And he said that's one of the things, his relationship with Elvin, it prepared him for these moments now and competing for a roster spot, competing for playing time at running back. He has a good relationship with Jamal Williams, too, that we've already talked about. They share the same agent. They're roommates. But at the end of the day, it's about trying to prove that you can play football at this level, and that's something he's looking to do and as the Packers get ready for this summer.
No question about it. Well, with that, Wes, we'll throw it to a break. Back with more on Packers Unscripted right after this. Welcome back to Packers Unscripted. Mike Spofford here, Wes Hodkowitz over there. And Wes, another fifth-round draft pick worth talking about a little bit more. D'Angelo Yancey, the wide receiver out of Purdue. Kind of a funny story the way this developed. Not only did he decide to take a Lambeau leap when he came on a pre-draft visit for Green Bay, which I wrote about on the website, sort of thought, you know, hey, I'm in Green Bay. Who knows if I'll ever get back here again? Might as well do a Lambeau leap when they give me a stadium tour, right?
Yeah, and if you come as an opposing player, I'm guessing they're not going to, the fans aren't going to allow you to do it. So,
for sure.
You know, you make the most of that opportunity when it's presented to you.
Yeah, but there's another part of the story with his pre-draft visit to Green Bay having to do with some travel issues that you found out about.
Yeah, I was told that it's actually interesting. Before he got to Green Bay, it was, I don't know if you recall this, but, you know, all the flight delays and the issues that happened, you know, about a month, 2 months ago. Well, Yancey got caught in that in the Atlanta airport, from what I was told. He actually had spent 2 days there trying to wait for a flight into Green Bay, coordinating with the Packers to come in for his pre-draft visit. So a little bit of adversity off the start for him to get up here. But once he did, you know, a cool moment for him. And as it turned out, it would end up being a precursor to what happened on draft day.
Yeah, kind of some expensive airport meals there he probably had to swallow. I wonder if he gets to expense those now that the Packers drafted him, since that was a trip to Green Bay.
That is a good point. I never even thought about that. I don't know if the airlines help him out there a little bit or how that goes. I didn't get a chance to really ask him about it yet. But definitely it took the long way to getting to Green Bay.
Yeah, when you talk about the numbers with D'Angelo Yancey, the one that jumps out more than any other was that 19.4 yards per catch last season for Purdue, a program that was struggling in the Big Ten, not a very dynamic or explosive offense, but this guy was their explosive player. 19 yards per catch in the Big Ten against some pretty good defenses, including a really big game against the University of Wisconsin. This is a guy who, he could make some plays deep. He could also get the yards after the catch. A really intriguing prospect.
You know, everybody talks, especially in the Midwest, about the offensive linemen from the Big Ten. But I think sometimes something that gets overrated or underrated, excuse me, is the cornerbacks and defensive backs in that conference. And really the type of guys that you have to defeat if you're going to be successful as a receiver. And Yancey did that. And I thought one of the things that was interesting, too, he talked about when he did get into Green Bay, he talked with Vince Beagle, Packers' fourth-round pick from Wisconsin, about that game against the Badgers last year. Now, the Badgers won handily,
yeah,
but Yancey had a big game against them.
Big time.
And really sort of was a little bit of a microcosm of his season, where Purdue just wasn't able to get things going offensively, but when they got the ball on his hands, whether it was something underneath and him getting the yards after the catch or him taking a top off the secondary, he found ways to be successful. And, you know, you look at his numbers, he's not going to, you know, jump out of the gym. I mean, it's not like he's running a 4.2 or anything like that.
Right.
But he's really effective in what he does well. And as we saw in person, a really big receiver that I think the Packers are going to like.
That's what I was going to say, is when we saw him in that opening practice of rookie orientation, I've been in this role over a decade now, and I don't like to compare players a lot in terms of ability. Everybody brings their own stuff to the table. But in terms of just the physical build and the physical stature, just sort of what they look like at first glance, Yancey reminded me a heck of a lot of James Jones.
When he started talking, he reminded me a lot of James Jones, honestly.
I mean, really?
He had a very similar sort of cadence and, you know, just the way he carried himself, to conducted himself. But yes, when you look at the build, that's what I was kind of alluding to a little bit. The Packers have had success with those kind of bigger, stronger receivers because it is one thing to be able to run the 4-2s and, you know, have these big, giant, explosive plays. It's also something else to be able to shed would-be tacklers, and that's something Jones did very effectively during his NFL career. Now, we have to see what kind of receiver Yancey is. We only got to see him catch a few passes in a non-contact practice.
Right.
But there are a lot of tools to like, and much like when we talked about Malachi Dupree, different types of receivers. But you have to like the kind of attributes the Packers brought into that room on the third day, because I think those are guys that are going to come in and really compete for spots.
Yeah, it's interesting now. You look at the, as you mentioned, kind of the mix of attributes that the Packers have amongst the younger guys. You know, Trevor Davis and Jeff Janis kind of known for their speed. Then you have Yancey and Dupree, the new draft picks this year, a little bit bigger physically in terms of just coming out of college, right. And how they've developed. So that competition, we talked about it at running back, but that competition behind really the top three receivers on this team, we all know who they are. But those are going to be some pretty heated battles for roster spots as well.
Yeah, and there's always been stuff that surprised you with those receivers the past few years. I mean, you go back to 2012 when Jared Boykin made the roster. We've talked about that in the past with how deep it was there. You look even like a guy like Geronimo Allison last year, arguably put together a preseason that was worthy of making the 53. He sticks around on the practice squad. He gets that midseason promotion, ends up making a big impact at the end of the season. So you never really know when you're going to need those guys. And these two young men are going to have a real chance this offseason to impress.
Yeah, well, another big story to watch. And with that, we'll throw it to another break. Back with more on Packers Unscripted right after this. Welcome back to Packers Unscripted. Mike Spofford alongside Wes Hodkiewicz. And Wes, every once in a while on the show, we take on a topic that you and I have both been answering questions about in our Insider Inbox feature on the website. And a particularly hot topic, I guess you might say, if any sort of off-season topic is considered a hot topic.
Oh, they are.
But it's the Packers-Bears rivalry. And it's interesting. It's really interesting to me, and maybe I'm going to date myself here a little bit, but it seems that there are a lot of fans out there who don't really look at the Packers-Bears rivalry the same way as people did when I was growing up. It's almost as though there's an entire generation of Packers fans out there now that doesn't really look at Packers-Bears as a rivalry, because the Packers over the last decade plus, even the last quarter century really, have dominated it so much. But that wasn't always the case.
Yeah, and it's interesting. This question originally got posed on the inbox from, you know, international fans that are still trying to kind of gain the flavor of the Packers and who their big adversaries are. And the Bears are always going to be at the top of that list, and the reason is because it goes back to the 20s.
Yeah.
And I think one of the common misconceptions is, okay, well, the Packers had some lean years in the 50s, obviously took some shots in the 70s and 80s, but I think what a lot of people don't understand is even if you go back to the Curly Lambeau days, the Bears actually, for the most part, had gotten the better of the Packers. It wasn't until the Lombardi era that the Packers actually won a decade.
Yeah.
And then they didn't do it again until the 1990s. So while the Packers have dominated this lately, and it's the reason why the series for the first time is tied since 1933, 94, 94, and 6. The reason why it's still really important is because you almost have a century of games that have been played now. It's incredible. And I think if anyone ever gets complacent in victory in a rivalry like that, you need to go back and start revisiting the history, because it's really, really deep.
Yeah, you mentioned the Lombardi era when the Packers clearly had the edge. Then the next time was when Brett Favre came along. Brett Favre's track record over all those years, 16 seasons as a starting quarterback for the Packers, really impressive. Some memorable games. I mean, the monsoon on Halloween in Chicago. I remember a quasi-Hail Mary before halftime to Antonio Freeman at Soldier Field, just making an incredible catch. Brett Favre really started to swing this one back in Green Bay's way, and Aaron Rodgers has continued it. Interestingly, the one time really over the last 25 years that it started to go back Chicago's way a little bit was right when Lovie Smith was hired, and I wrote about this in our Insider Inbox. When Smith was hired as Chicago's head coach in 2004, his very first press conference, he was talking about the number one goal, the top priority for the Chicago Bears. It wasn't to go to a Super Bowl. It wasn't this or that. It was beat Green Bay. And there was another message in that, that if you were going to win the division, you have to get past the Packers. So that was implied. But just the fact that he came right out and said that, I thought that was a really interesting moment in the history of this rivalry. And then Lovie Smith's Bears won 4 out of 5 and 6 out of the first 8 with him as the head coach.
Yeah, and then that to me, going back, I think that was one of the great moments in not only this rivalry, but in the NFL. In at least in the last 20, 25 years, because you don't hear teams talk like that much. Not necessarily like, oh, we need to beat this team, but that division rivalry, the history, and also the understanding that the quickest direction as the crow flies to the Super Bowl is by winning your division. And if you're going to win your division, you have to beat the man, which had been to that point the Green Bay Packers. Now, as it turned out, things swung really rapidly back to Green Bay in that rivalry with the Bears, and then ultimately Smith gets replaced. But that was the one time, I think, when you look in terms of not just a flash moment, that there really was a lot there in terms of when the Packers played the Bears, you weren't exactly sure which way it was going to go.
Yeah, and if anybody out there has read the book written by Cliff Crystal, our Packers team historian, he and Gary D'Amato wrote a book called Mud Baths and Blood Baths on the history of the Packers-Bears rivalry. It's really a fantastic look, a lot of great historical anecdotes in there. And I can tell you, as somebody who grew up in Platteville, Wisconsin, in the mid-1980s, where the Chicago Bears had their training camp every summer, Bears fans are never going to forget that Charles Martin body slam of Jim McMahon.
Yeah, they still haven't.
Which really, you know, if you were to point to one main reason that those mid-80s Bears teams that were so good, why they did not get to another Super Bowl, it was probably because of that play. Bears fans have never forgotten that, and that was in the Forrest Gregg era when he was head coach of the Packers, where there was some really nasty stuff going on in that rivalry.
Yeah, and the 30 for 30 that they did on the Bears, they actually did a really nice job, I thought, of covering that and including that in terms of, because, I mean, they looked at the whole Mike Ditka era, and that really was kind of where things started to it sort of hit its peak and was starting to decline. And also, it was interesting going back and watching those games. The Packers were by far the big underdogs in those, but they still meant a lot. And I think that's one of the reasons why, even in 2017, when the Bears are clearly in a rebuilding mindset, you still can't take that rivalry for granted.
Yeah, and Packers fans, of course, didn't take kindly to William Refrigerator Perry, you know, scoring those touchdowns. Yeah. Kind of felt like the Bears were rubbing their faces in it a little bit when Chicago had the upper hand in the 80s. So for those who are too young to remember or to know, there's a lot more history to this than meets the eye. But we got to get to a break, Wes. With that, back with more on Packers Unscripted right after this. Welcome back to Packers Unscripted. Mike Spofford joined by Wes Hodkowitz. And Wes, final segment, I wanted to touch on another topic that's come up in our insider inbox in the last several days. And that's what has been going on this offseason in Denver with regards to season ticket holders. A really interesting chain of events here where the Broncos have started to pull season ticket privileges from the ticket holders who have a track record or a long history of always selling their tickets on the secondary market and not using the tickets themselves. A lot of those secondary market sales being tracked electronically and whatnot. A really interesting thing, because a lot of fans now asking, well, is this going to become a trend in the NFL? Are other teams, you know, including the Packers, going to, you know, try to track this and look at this? And I don't think there's an easy answer to this, because I understand some of the fan sentiment, and certainly club sentiment, that they don't always want those tickets going to opposing fans to lessen the home field advantage, so to speak. But then again, this is America. The tickets are yours. You should be able to do with them what you want to do with them.
Yeah, and you also assume the risk of, you know, who you sell them to if they would end up doing something that would be out of the lines of legality, maybe, or just fan conduct. So those are all things that you assume. But two things to this. The first thing is, obviously, I'm not in ticketing department. When I look at my pay stub, it says staff writer. So yeah. I don't know all the intricacies of what exactly goes into those decision-making processes. But I do know from experience, my parents did not have season tickets when I was growing up. I live 20 minutes away from Lambeau Field. in a lot of ways, especially up until when the Brown County seats came in 2003, if I wanted to go to a game, like I believe it was in 1998, I got to see Peyton Manning play his rookie year.
Okay.
My dad went to a ticket broker and bought the tickets there, and I got to sit on the 50-yard line and watch that contest. That's how I was able to view games for the most part. So it goes both ways. You obviously want to keep a curtail on things. You don't want things to get out of control on that secondary market. But at the same time, especially, and I heard this from a lot of people on the inbox about, you know, out-of-towners or people that are coming in from the country, that's their access to it as well. So there is no easy answer to this, but it is a copycat league, both on the field and off the field. So yep. I understand that sentiment right now of, you know, are other teams going to adopt this as well?
Yeah, and it's interesting because there's also the entire segment of Packers fans, and I think you were alluding to this, that their opportunity to go to the road games and all the talk about Packers fans who travel so well and, you know, all these Green Bay fans that are in the away stadiums, that's also their access is season ticket holders in those other stadiums who make those seats available on the secondary market. I think one of the biggest problems with what Denver did that has upset a lot of people is that they started doing this without any warning. They didn't tell anybody what the new rules supposedly were going to be in terms of any season ticket policy, and that has upset a lot of people. And you'd have to think that if this were to become a trend in any way, shape, or form, that the communication of what's going on would have to improve.
Transparency is really important in these kind of matters. I think personally, if this is something you want to institute, I think you warn season ticket holders ahead of that season, okay, we're going to be tracking this after the season, reassess and make a decision from there. Because there is some people that just, you can't make it to a game, you sell your tickets, can't make it to two games, you sell your tickets. That's just how it goes sometimes. So very curious how this process goes moving forward and exactly what the answer is going to be.
Yeah, well, it's a story to follow in the coming years. But with that, we'll sign off on Packers Unscripted. Be sure to follow all of our coverage of the team on Packers.com. On Twitter, you can find him at Wes Hodd. I'm at Mike Spofford, at Packers for the team account. Thanks for tuning in, everybody. We'll see you next time.